Possible by the Illinois Shakespeare Festival, presenting Shakespeare's Comedy of Errors and Macbeth, plus Failure, a Love Story by Philip Dawkins from July 6th through August 10th at Ewing Manor in Bloomington. Ticket information is available at thefestival.org or 309-438-2535.
You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine here on WILL AM 580. Let's take a look at your Champaign-Urbana weather. For the rest of today, we're expecting it to be mostly sunny. The chance of rain through the afternoon has been reduced to about 10%. I know earlier today we were looking at about a 40% chance of afternoon rain. So 10% chance of rain this afternoon, and then this evening that climbs up to about 30 or 40%. We're going to see a low of 63 tonight and a pretty high wind coming in, about 20 to 25 miles per hour with gusts. Tomorrow, scattered thunderstorms are expected. There's about a 40% chance of rain and a high of 72, northwest winds of about 15 miles an hour, so not too severe. By the evening, 58 degrees and a 30% chance of rain. Looking at the rest of the weekend, we are going to see a 30% chance of rain on Sunday. Isolated thunderstorms are expected with some regionally high storms coming in. About a high of 75 in the afternoon, then by the evening that'll get down to a low of 57. And then by Monday, it's going to be partly cloudy. We're going to see a high of 75, 10% chance of rain. By Monday night, 30% chance of rain again. And then pretty much the rest of the week until Independence Day, we are going to see a 30% chance of rain and isolated thunderstorms throughout Champaign-Urbana. Right now, it is 84 degrees at Friends Plaza in Urbana and slightly overcast. You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL Radio.
Support comes from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium in Urbana. The Corkscrew's Bouvon Wine Bar features live music. This Friday night from 6 to 8, it's Urbana SoundCloud, and from 9 to 11, Desafinado. The Saturday wine tasting will be selections from Oregon and Washington State. Details on the Corkscrew's Facebook page.
You're listening to WILL. I'm Chris Berube. It's time for a story in Illinois Public Media's Neighbors series. It's a series that we created to introduce interesting people that you may not know here in East Central Illinois. You may have already heard of Aaron Ammons, especially if you listen to our news broadcasts. The Urbana resident has been an outspoken critic of local law enforcement and particularly their treatment of African Americans. For many who know him personally, though, Aaron Ammons is someone who's drawn on his talents and experience to enrich the lives of others in lots of other fields. Illinois Public Media's Jeff Bossert has this profile of Ammons.
The Ammonses are a close-knit bunch, and there's no love lost when Aaron and his sister take sides. Here, they're watching an NBA playoff game between the Indiana Pacers and Miami Heat.
Right. Just get up and play.
Oh, can you get a technical? Oh, you ain't gonna give him a technical? Why am I
gonna
do
that? That's a bad call.
That deserves a technical. And see, that's the kind of stuff that might turn the game around.
Unique says her brother enjoys rooting against her, but is a lot more supportive of her own efforts on the basketball court.
When it came to me, tips and going to the gym and shooting around and making sure I shot free throws the right way, three-pointers the right way, that was him.
You can see another example of Aaron Ammon's support for the effort of others at the University of Illinois' Krannert Art Museum. For the past few years, he's been overseeing the Speak Cafe, a series of open mic events for young African Americans. He's on hand to hear Coco Harmon read a poem about her mother.
I was a seed and your tears were my rain, causing me to grow into this beautiful flower, and I thank you daily for your love shower. Thank you for sincerely loving me, and inside of me will long live my mother's, your mother's, their mother's, a mother's legacy.
That was beautiful. Y'all like that?
Yeah.
Is that beautiful? I thought so. Anybody else want to? What about some snaps for your mom?
Aaron's work with the Speak Cafe grew out of his own poetry that expresses some of the darkest times of his life. Back at home, he recited from one of his poems entitled, Do I Remember?
Across the street from the preacher, I sneak a peek at the truth. But I'm caught up in the game, selling hell to the youth through pregnant queens. I had to get paid and this was my means. First a solo, but now I'm building a team that I'll regret before it's over though.
In Do I Remember, Ammons recalls a time in his life when he was first dealing and then using drugs. Aaron says he was a popular student and standout basketball player at Champaign Central High School and Parkland College, but he wasn't focused on a career.
Because I was never fully committed to the academic aspect of college. I did not understand what college was really about, what it meant to my future. I eventually fell and succumbed to the allure of street life and did all that stuff.
When they told me he was doing, I was like, no, you're lying.
Ammon's mother, Valerie, was in denial when hearing rumors on the street about her son.
I was neurotic, I guess, because I was always thinking he's going to get killed or he's going to go to jail. And I couldn't have, that couldn't be my baby doing that.
Aaron says he was arrested, did a few weeks in the Champaign County Jail awaiting trial, but was only sentenced to probation. It is hard to say where Aaron would have eventually ended up if he hadn't found a job at the Chanute Transition Center, a now-closed Rantoul facility for troubled youth. That's where he met Carol, now his wife and mother to their three kids.
He had the patience and the amount of discipline that they needed to help them to see a different path.
Carol Ammon says her upbringing was very different from Aaron's. She's a Muslim who grew up in a home with no drugs or alcohol. She got Aaron to kick his remaining addictions. Carol says they shared an interest in public service and giving back to the community.
His potential was greater than what he was doing, and I could see his potential. He was always an excellent writer. He could speak well, and he didn't capitalize on the natural gifts and talents that he had.
Carol found Aaron's poetry stashed under his bed and convinced him to publish his work. That's led to the publication of two books, and a third is on the way. Carol says 100 copies of the first one, Journey Through Another Man's Mind, were donated to Champaign County jail facilities.
People that he knew in that lifestyle that he had come from began to write him and say how much the book inspired them to do something else. I think he got it at that point.
Carol's interest in politics and Aaron's own brushes with the law led them both to getting involved in Champaign-Urbana Citizens for Peace and Justice, a group dedicated to addressing racial and class inequities in the communities. From there, their involvement in local politics has taken different paths. Carol Ammons is an elected official, currently serving on the Urbana City Council. Aaron Ammons can often be seen addressing the same elected bodies that his wife serves on issues that include the use of tasers by police, proposals for county jail expansion, and the 2009 Champaign police shooting of teenager Kawan Carrington. Tom Bruno has listened to several of Aaron Ammons' strongly worded remarks in his role as a Champaign City Council member. The two are far apart on several issues, but Bruno says Aaron is a bright guy who plays a needed role in the public sphere.
When fans of a baseball park scream at the umpire that he's blind, they're not really thinking they're going to change his point of view. And so in that respect, I appreciate what he's doing. I actually like Aaron a lot on a personal level.
Aaron Ammons works as a building service worker for the University of Illinois, work he takes pride in doing. But he's taking some classes at Eastern Illinois University, one step towards his ultimate goal of becoming a lawyer. At age 42, Ammons hasn't set a deadline for getting a law degree and passing the bar exam, but he says it would be a dream come true to just once step into a courtroom and defend a client. I'm Jeff Bossert, Illinois Public Media.
You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine here on WILL. You can find all of our episodes of Neighbors online at our website, will.illinois.edu. Now, today is the last Afternoon Magazine, and I thought about it, and I decided that I'd like to play one of my favorite pieces of radio, so I went back into the archives and got permission for this. This is something from a comedy duo called Coyle and Sharp. Now, Coyle and Sharp were two men who, back in the, I guess it was the 1960s, were hired by a radio station in San Francisco to wander the streets wearing suits and ties, and their whole deal is that they would record themselves trying to convince strangers of some of the weirdest things that they could ever think of. Now, the reason I found out about these guys is I worked at a radio station in Toronto, Canada for a while. I was a fill-in music director, and I was going through tens of thousands of CDs and came across this one, and it's just become one of my favorite things. So here's Coyle and Sharp. This is an example of the type of thing they used to do on the streets of San Francisco.
Can we have your name, please?
Julia Derry.
Julia?
Yes.
And you work down here in the financial district?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
A group of people in the musical world here in our city are exploiting animals for the purpose of making music. Would you say that you're essentially opposed to the idea of taking an animal and trying to evoke music from an animal?
Yes, I'm very much against the idea, yeah.
Why do you say that, Julia?
Well, because it's cruel. It's not right to do this sort of thing to animals.
You mean to say that if you could actually take a wolf, or let's say a jackal, in your arms and actually press over the body of this jackal the bow of a violin or a cello, and beautiful music would come from this contact that the bow has with the animal, you don't think that you yourself would be entranced and would overcome any misgivings you have about it?
I don't think so, because I'm sure it would hurt whatever animal it was. And I mean, if it didn't hurt it at all, I think that would be fine, but...
If the animals were doped?
Or if they were completely out and it didn't injure them in any way, yes, I suppose that would be okay.
Would you yourself, if you knew that you could get a really enjoyable and uplifting musical experience by attending a concert in which animals were used as stringed musical instruments, would you hesitate to attend this concert?
No, I'd love to go and see it, just to see what it was like. But I mean, I'm against it, but I'd like to see what sort of thing they could produce.
So that's Coyle and Sharp. In other episodes of their program, they actually enlisted a man to help them rob a bank. In another one, they convinced somebody that they're turning into a werewolf. And they weren't always successful. So three of the tracks on the CD are actually called Coyle and Sharp Are Arrested. But usually they were really successful. They convinced people of these weird, horrifying things. And I remember that Sharp, who I believe is still alive, gave an interview a couple of years ago, and someone asked him the reason that he believed that he got away with it so often, of convincing people of crazy things. And his answer was, well, because people trust somebody with a radio microphone. And I've come to realize that that's one of the incredible things about what I get to do, is that when you have a radio microphone, you have this tremendous privilege where you get to talk to people about very personal things, very intimate things, very complicated things, and get answers that they wouldn't give to anyone else. So I want to say thank you very much for listening to The Afternoon Magazine. Thanks for listening to me. And I hope that you've found out some unusual and interesting things from listening to the program. This is WILL.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson, Pioneer Seeds, Standard Grain, Cornerstone Building Products, and Risk Management Commodities. Thanks to these businesses for their support of WILL agricultural programs.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 28th of June, 2013. It's the birthday of philosopher and writer Jean-Jacques Rousseau, born in Geneva on this day in 1712. In 1749, the Academy of Dijon sponsored an essay contest, and the question was, has the revival of the arts and sciences done more to corrupt or to purify morals? Rousseau was delighted by the question, and he said that his head was so full of ideas he was unable to breathe. He said, "And that is how I became a writer, almost against my will. The remainder of my life and all my subsequent misfortunes were the inevitable result of this moment of aberration." Rousseau was normally a lazy fellow, but he worked feverishly on his essay, A Discourse on the Sciences and Arts, and it won first prize. He went on to write many more philosophical works, including his famous The Social Contract, in which he said that the natural condition of humanity is to be brutal and lawless, and that it is through an agreed social contract of what constitutes a good society that humans are able to rise above their base nature. It's the birthday of comedian and filmmaker Mel Brooks, born Melvin Kaminsky in Brooklyn in 1929. In the Army in World War II, he deactivated mines after the Battle of the Bulge while he was organizing shows for his fellow servicemen. In 1949, his friend Sid Caesar asked him to write for his comedy program, Your Show of Shows, and later he wrote his first feature film, The Producers. The movie didn't do well at the box office, but it was made into a Broadway musical and won 15 Tony Awards. Mel Brooks, who said, "Tragedy is when I cut my finger. Comedy is when you walk into an open sewer and die." It was on this day in 1948 that Shirley Jackson's controversial short story, The Lottery, was published in The New Yorker. Hundreds of readers wrote to the magazine, many of them wanting to cancel their subscriptions because they were so upset by the story, which ends with people in a small village stoning one of their citizens. Jackson later wrote, On the morning of June 28, 1948, I walked down to the post office in our little Vermont town to pick up the mail. I was quite casual about it, as I recall. I opened the box, took out a couple of bills and a letter or two, talked to the postmaster for a few minutes, and left, never supposing that it was the last time for months that I was to pick up the mail without an active feeling of panic. By the next week, I had to change my mailbox to the largest one in the post office, and casual conversation with the postmaster was out of the question because he wasn't speaking to me. And here's a poem by Seamus Heaney, Fireside. Always there would be stories of lights hovering among bushes or at the foot of a meadow, maybe a goat with cold horns pluming into the moon, a tingle of chains on the midnight road, and then maybe word would come round of that watery art, the lamping of fishes, and I'd be